today is a continuation of last week, where we were speaking to you about the Tower of Babel. We explained to you what these people were doing and what their intentions were in building this tower. They meant thereby that they would be a universal monarchy, and that they would be not scattered away from each other, but would have unity. And they, in building this tower, they meant to climb up to heaven thereby. They meant thereby that they would be one, would be strong, and would have much that they could defend themselves with. In building this tower, they were all together in unity. I said to you there lay a very clear spiritual meaning in this building that was going on. In building this tower, many people who are amongst the hearers of the gospel are convicted of sin. They are brought by the Spirit of God to see that they are sinning against a God who is just, who is holy, and who is righteous. And when this takes place in a person's life, then this person begins to mend his ways. He begins to labor just like these people in laboring and building this city and this tower. They change completely from what they once were. It is a remarkable sight to see someone turning away from sin, away from the world, away from serving the devil and all the things that are the pleasures of this life. And when this takes place, this person is laboring very hard in his own strength against insuperable difficulties. I don't know if any one of you, my hearers, have ever attempted to do this. Have you ever made a resolution inwardly to turn away from everything in this world and serve God? If you did, you have found that many things came up against you. And in doing this, you have been working and laboring very hard to try to satisfy your conscience. For conscience is the monitor which tells us whether we are doing good or whether we are doing evil. When we do evil, it reprimands us. When we do good, it praises us. And such a person is laboring to pacify this voice that is speaking within him. We all have this voice in us. And now you may go to a great extent in performing these outward duties and trying to keep this voice quiet within. All this is hard work, my hearers. I know this from experience, or otherwise I couldn't teach you this. Now, this is what almost every child of God attempts to do. They try to satisfy God with their own works. They begin to build a wall of their own righteousness. Have you ever attempted to do it? And some have come so far that they have said inwardly, if I don't get to heaven, nobody will. They look upon what they're doing and they approve what they are doing even. They are so satisfied with their own works and with the life that they are leading, and they look so holy and so godly in the eyes of other people that they really believe that they're going to heaven. I wonder if there are any such amongst my hearers. All the Pharisees were like that when Christ was upon earth. They were like whited sepulchres, beautiful on the outside. And so you may be beautiful on the outside to the eyes of others. You may be a person who another admires and says, if that isn't a Christian, I don't know who is. And still, you may be like these whited sepulchres filled with dead bones within. My hearers, it's a great mercy when this happens to us, what happened to these people that were building this tower. What happened? God came down to look upon what they were doing. Has God ever come down to look upon what you're doing, my hearers? Oh, when he comes down and looks, he comes down in mercy. It's not in wrath, it's not in anger. You may think so. But when he comes down and he sees what you are attempting to do, and then something happens just like what happened to these people. God confused their speech. They became confounded. They couldn't go on any longer to build this tower. They couldn't speak with each other. They couldn't tell each other what they had to do. So they were scattered over the whole face of the earth. And that is what God does in a spiritual sense. When God comes down and views what you and I have been doing, and then he confounds us. What happens? Let me tell you what happens. Oh, there may be some secret sin that you have been fighting against, that you have been praying against, that you have been pleading with God that he won't let you commit that sin anymore. I know this from experience, my hearers. And lo and behold, you have been kept to that present moment. And then in an unguarded moment, and then sometimes in the presence of someone whom you have warned against that sin, that they shouldn't go on in it, there you tumble headlong into that sin. Oh, my hearers, these people were building a tower to make a name for themselves. And you've been building this tower too, and you've made a name for yourself too amongst other people. But here in the midst of someone probably, as I've just said, down comes this wall that you have built. It comes crashing down upon your own head. Your name, your character, and everything seems to be ruined to you. And where are now all your resolutions and all what you thought you were going to do? Oh, my hearers, I do wish that every one of you would experience this. It isn't a very pleasant place to be brought to, believe me. Or to be brought to that spot that you are so confused and so confounded that you don't know what to do anymore. Yes, you are a fit object, my hearers, for the pity, for the compassion, and for the mercy of God, although you don't feel it. You come to that point and you say, well, what's the use of trying to live for God? What's the use of trying to live a holy life? You've tried it and it's an impossibility. And you say, what's the use of praying anymore? You want to give everything up. And you do. Inwardly, you do. You're just ruined. You're just undone. Because everything that you thought was right becomes wrong. And now, would you believe now that that is the mercy, that that's the love, that's the kindness of God over you? Believe me, my hearers, there are thousands of people that go on in this way. And, oh, they have a name in the church. Some of them are preachers. Some of them are teachers in Bible classes. And they're respected for their life, for their conversation, for the wisdom and understanding that they have. And God leaves them go on. And he lets him die in that state. It's the mercy of God when God comes to us and confounds us and confuses us and lays us in this particular position when we don't know what to do. Then we are in the place where God can teach us and direct us what to do. And oh, when you are in this state, believe me, my hearers, I know from experience, I didn't know what to do. Sometimes you'd walk the streets, you're so confused, you think, well, what's the use of living? You don't even want to live anymore. Because what's going to be the end? You're going to meet God and it's going to be lost. And now it pleases God when you are in that state, sometimes under the means of grace, sometimes when you're reading his word, sometimes when you in desperation fall down before him, then he comes. He comes and he fills you with a feeling sense of his presence. Oh, there's majesty, there's glory surrounding you at that present moment. And you have to do with that great and that glorious and that divine being against whom you have sinned. Oh, then you are brought in contact with that God who before you were trying to serve, who you were trying to be reconciled to with your own works. But now God comes, and God begins to work in you. All my hearers, from laboring and striving and slaving to keep from sin, to keep from the world, to keep from the lust and the passions and the corruptions of your nature. Oh, God begins inwardly. What a difference. What a change, my hearers. I don't know if any of you have ever experienced it. But oh, when this divine life is implanted in your soul, then there's a change, not only inwardly, but outwardly. And it is so simple and so easy to leave sin, to leave the world, to leave the flesh. You know why? Because God manifests in your soul His grace, His mercy, His love, His favor. And oh, you feel your heart going out to that God, as you never did in all your life. As the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, the living God. Do you ever have that? Oh, I wish I had it every day of my life. Oh, what a wonderful feeling that is when our hearts go out to that living God. There's life there. There's breathings after God. And all you would spend hours alone breathing out your desires, your longings, your complaints, your sins to this God whose ear is open to listen to you and to who you believe that He is listening to you. Oh, what a wonderful thing it is, my hearers, when God begins a work of grace in a person's soul. I do not wish to continue with this, for then I would go away from my subject completely. This is a little spiritual interpretation of building a Tower of Babel and finding it to come down, crashing on your head, becoming a confused sinner, but being led on the narrow way by God Himself. And now we have in the same chapter the history of various patriarchs that lived, and we have also the history of Terah, the father of Abraham. Now these people, they lived in the land called Ur of the Chaldees. Now this land was noted for its idolatry. Now there was no knowledge of the true God in this land. And behold, we read in the first verse of the next chapter, and God came unto Abraham while he was in this land, and said unto him that he should leave his country and his father's house and his kindred, and that he should go into a land which he would show unto him. Just imagine this. In such a land where they were doing nothing else but worshiping idols, God came to one person, Abraham, made choice of him, called him out of that land, and told him to go up out of that land and leave his father's house and his kindred. My hearers, idolatry is a sin that has been practiced throughout this universe and is still practiced in many countries. Idolatry is either internal or external. Internal, it's an inordinate love of the creature, a love for riches and for the pleasures of this life. External, it's worshiping things that are contrary to God and to His Word. Throughout this wide world, and as long as it has stood, people have worshipped various things. They have worshipped the creature. They have worshipped the sun, the moon, the stars. They have worshipped reptiles. They have worshipped plants. They even have worshipped human beings who have been beneficiary to mankind in many ways. And they idolize the creature above the God of heaven and earth. Many people, even to this very moment, still worship idols. And now, the Roman Catholics They likewise, they worshiped the Virgin Mary. They worshiped saints. They worshiped images, the cross, relics. They worshiped likewise the host, the bread that is administered in the Lord's Supper. They believed this to be actually the body of Christ. This worship is nothing else but idolatry, although they disown it and say that they worship God and worship these in a subordinate sense, still it is idolatry. And now, my hearers, there are many people who worship something that they love and that they crave and that they idolize above God, who, if we term them to be idolaters, they would become angry. I am afraid that every one of us, to a certain extent, have something that we idolize. And in this sense, we all are idolaters. Oh, that we may be on the lookout, and that we may be in a prayerful and a watchful frame, that we may not fall into this sin of idolatry. And now Abraham was called out of this land of idolatry. Abraham is a type of the Church of Christ and of each individual member thereof. We are all in the land of destruction, in the land of idolatry, the world. And what a wonderful thing it is when God comes and calls us out of this land in which we are in. When he comes to us like he did to Abraham and says unto him that he should go up out of his country and forsake his father's house and his kindred, and God would show him the land that he should go into. This happens, my hearers. Has it ever happened to you? Has God ever called you by his grace? Has he ever told you to leave and to forsake your country? What does that mean? The world. So that's our country. That's our element. That's what we live in. That's what we enjoy. To leave that, to forsake that, there's more necessary than just our own strength and power, my hearers. And to leave our family, our kindred, our father's house. Christ teaches us that we should forsake our father, our mother, our sister, our brother, and everything, or otherwise we cannot be his disciple. And now when God came to Abraham in this way, he gave Abraham faith, and Abraham believed what God spake unto him. Likewise, when God calls a sinner out of this world, he gives him faith to leave and to forsake everything. Have you ever done it? Have you ever left your country, your father's house, your wife, your children? Has God become the most in your life? If not, my hearers, I'm afraid you never have been called out of this world. Oh, God gives faith to his children, and they can forsake everything for God and for his word and for his commandments. The love that he sheds abroad in their hearts causes them to leave everything. Oh, God makes a separation between the closest friends, my hearers, believe me. They used to say in Holland, the bridge is pulled up and the people can't go back anymore. They got to go forward, and that's true. God pulls up the bridge and you can't go back to your former life anymore. Oh, no. Forward you go. God leads you. I graciously will teach you the way that thou shalt go, and with my eye upon thee, my counsel make thee know. Has he done it to you, my hearers? Then you have a blessed teacher. You have one that's leading you, and he'll never lead you astray. He'll lead you to that land, which at times he will give you a view of. Or he led Abraham into the land of Canaan, which is a type of heaven above. And at times in this wilderness here below, God is pleased to open the eyes of faith for his children to behold that land, which is afar off, to behold the King in his beauty. Oh, I am sure if ever God gives you a view of Jesus and of that land that is afar off, you wish you would have wings and fly away and be there. You wouldn't want to remain here any longer. And now Abraham, he was also given promises. When God called him out of Ur of Chaldees, he said unto him that I will bless thee, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will also curse those that curse thee, and bless those that bless thee. And I will make thee a great nation, and all the families of the earth will be blessed in thee. Wonderful promises God gave unto this man Abraham. Now, this man Abraham is the father of the Israelitish nation. He is the father of all the faithful. And this man Abraham, he was promised that God would bless him and that he would be a blessing. And he was, my hearers. And every child of God, when God calls him out of this world, God says unto him, I will bless you. God's blessing rests upon that person. And no matter who may curse him, that curse causeless will never come. God was with his people. And Abraham, he became a blessing. And every child of God becomes a blessing. They are a blessing to their family. They are a blessing to the community that they dwell in. They are a blessing likewise to their neighbors. They are a blessing to the church that they belong to. They are a blessing in this world. It is many times the reason that these people who are praying people, that God turns his wrath away. Oh, what a blessing! I wish we had many such amongst us. They are blessed creatures whom God blesses. And my hearers, God promised Abraham that out of him all the families of the earth would be blessed. You would say, well, how is everyone going to be blessed out of this family of Abraham? This promise, my hearers, means that out of Abraham would come forth the Messiah, and that in and through the Messiah all the families of the earth would be blessed. And we find Abraham coming to a place called Haran. He left his country and he took with him his aged father. He took with him his brother and he took with him his nephew Lot and his wife and Lot's wife and all the substance that they had, and they came to Haran. And now in Haran we find that the brother of Abraham died. And Lot, who was the son of this man, he went up with Abraham from Haran. They abode in Haran about 2 years. And after this, they, by divine direction, entered into the land of Canaan. And he left Nahor at Haran, his brother Nahor. And now when he came into the land of Canaan, we find that God appeared unto him and renewed his promise unto him, and said unto him, the land upon which thou art, I will give it unto thee and to thy seed after thee. Oh, my hearers, this man Abraham, he was walking in the way that God had told him to go. And it says in the book of Isaiah, thou meetest him whom worketh righteousness, and obeyeth thee, and walketh in thy ways. And Abraham experienced walking in the way of the Lord. The Lord met with him again and renewed his promise given unto him in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abraham, he erected an altar unto the Lord at this particular place, and he worshiped the Lord. I spake unto you last week about the altar that Noah raised up after he had been mercifully spared from the flood. That was the first time in the Bible that we read that there was an altar erected. And here we have Abraham, erecting an altar. Why did he erect this altar? Because God met with him, my hearers. Oh, has God ever met with you, my hearers? Has God ever communed with you? Has he ever spoken to you? It may be in the bench that you're sitting in. It may be in your home. It may be upon your knees. It may be at your work even sometimes that God communes with you and meets with you. And when that happens, my hearers, we erect an altar. Oh, we never forget that place, never. You know, you read of Jacob, he was at Bethel, and God met with him in Bethel and gave him a dream. And after he had this dream, he erected a stone, a pillar, and he said, this is none other but the gate of heaven. This is none other but the house of God. Have you ever had a place in your life that God met with you? Can you go back in your memory and say, then and then, God communed with me. God spoke with me. I can never forget the words that he said to me. I never can forget that place, that such a hallowed place in my memory. You know, this was a hallowed place to Abraham. After he had went down into the land of Egypt, he came up out of the land of Egypt and he came back to that place where that altar had been made, where God had communed with him. Have you ever been brought back to that place? God does that, my hearers. If you have some place in this life where God has met with you, he brings you back again to that place, sometimes under the hearing of the word. And then you're led again to see. At that in that time, God spoke to you and he met with you. Now that's that altar. That's that place in your memory that you can't get rid of. At times it's so buried you can't even think about it. But God brings it back by his blessed Spirit, which is a remembrancer unto each and every one of his children. And now this man, Abraham, he continued to travel and journey southward. And as he journeyed southward, we read that there came a famine in the land. And in this state of having nothing to eat and everything being dried up, he decided to go down into Egypt. For he had heard that in Egypt there was corn and there was food there. For this man, Abraham, we would like to cover this part of his life, for he is an illustrious man. But the Bible is so true, my hearers, because the Bible teaches us the faults as well as the good things about these saints. And now Abraham, he decided to go down into the land of Egypt. Whether he acknowledged God or not, we do not read. But when he got near to the land of Egypt, we see that unbelief was at work in Abraham. We see him speaking to his wife and saying unto his wife, now listen, when we come into the land of Egypt, you know they're going to see that you're a beautiful woman. And now, when you get into the land of Egypt, they're going to take you away from me and they're going to kill me. Now when you come into the land of Egypt, say that you're my sister, not my wife. And then it will go well with me for your sake. Now was this a lie? No. She was his sister. They were not of the same mother, but she was his sister. She was of another mother. But he had no trust in that God who had called him out of the land of the Chaldees at this present time. He had no faith in exercise concerning that even if he did go down into the land of Egypt and he acknowledged that she was his wife, that God could take care of him. No, he was afraid. Afraid of his own life. And now, my hearers, he came into the land of Egypt. We are ignorant creatures, and it's hard for us to understand how that a woman 65 years of age could be beautiful. But she must have been a beautiful woman, this Sarai. Abraham was 75 years old when God called him out of the land of the Chaldees. But that's a point that I forgot. The point that I would like to come back to, my hearers. You know, it's often said, old people, when they get old, there's no chance anymore for them. It's only God works in young people. When you're young, then you have an opportunity that God will give grace to you. But when you get 60, 70 years of age, you're past that time. Here we have an instance in the Bible, Abraham, 75 years of age, called by God himself. My hearers, age has nothing to do with the calling of God. God is a sovereign God. He calleth whom he will. And I don't care if you're 90 that's sitting here amongst my hearers. If it's God's time, he's going to come and he's going to draw you with the cords of his love. There's no impossibilities with this God that we worship. And this woman, she was 65 years of age, considered beautiful even by the Egyptians themselves. For when they went down into the land, she consented to what Abraham had said, and they went into this land. And while they were in this land, the fame of this woman was spread abroad that it came even unto the ears of Pharaoh. And he heard that there was this beautiful woman living with her brother. And he commanded that she be brought into his palace and that she dwell with him. And my hearers, this was done. And now this man, Pharaoh, he lavished all kinds of gifts upon Abraham. He gave him gold, silver, cattle, sheep. He was so good to Abraham, he made him wealthy. And then what happened? God came and plagued Pharaoh and his house because of Sarai, Abraham's wife. And it does not say what these plagues were. What God visited this family with, we know not. But it was such a plague that they were directed to the cause of why that they were being plagued. They were given to see that it was for this woman, Sarai. And they found out that it was not, as Abraham had said, it was his sister, but it was his wife. And therefore Pharaoh, he called Abraham to account. And he says, why hast thou deceived me so? Take thy wife and all what I have given thee, and go up out of my land. And he commanded his servants to do so unto Abraham. Here we have the wonderful protection of God over Abraham and over his wife. That this man, Pharaoh, had no dealings with his wife, that she was brought away from this house without any intercourse with this Pharaoh. God had kept him from performing such deeds with her. God is a good God, even when we go astray. Even when we turn out of the way, his eye is upon us. For our good. It was upon the eye upon Abraham. And therefore, Abraham and his wife and all that he had came up again out of the land of Egypt. And as they came up out of the land of Egypt, Abraham was very rich. Rich in cattle, rich in sheep. He had a lot of gold and a lot of silver. I've often thought about this. I don't know if you did. A little further on, you read in Scripture where he went to war against five kings. And when he made war with these kings, he triumphed over these kings. And he brought back Lot and his family and all that he had. And he brought back all the booty with him. But when he came back, you read that this king of Sodom, he said unto Abraham, you take all the booty and give me all the people. But then Abraham said, I have
sworn before the God of heaven and earth that I will not take a stitch, not as much as a shoe latchet from you, lest you say you have made Abraham rich. But here, he had received so much of this king, and he had become so rich. He wasn't rich when he went down there, but now he's rich. We don't hear him say anything about that. He didn't return it back to Pharaoh, but he took it. You may see in this God's blessing already. God had said, I will bless you, and he was blessed already. Let me here give you a little example of what Abraham is in the likes of the Israelites. You know, in after times, the Israelitish nation sprang from Abraham. And then we read of Jacob. There was a famine in the land, right? And he sent his sons down into the land of Egypt. Just like Abraham went down into the land of Egypt for a famine, so Jacob and his sons, they all came into the land of Egypt. And now while they were in the land of Egypt, then God plagued the Egyptians for the Israelites' sake. And then afterwards we read, the Egyptians, they lavished their gold and their jewels upon the Israelites, and they practically chased them out of their land. Just like with Abraham. Correct? Same thing. My time is gone, my hearers. 3:05. I'd like to continue with the story, but being our time is gone, I will have to conclude at this point. We have here Lot and Abraham, rich in all substance of earthly wares, the land becoming too great and too big for them. Next week, the Lord willing, we'll continue from this point, how that Lot and Abraham separated. When they were poor, they were united together, but when they became rich, they separated from each other. There's a point there. Next week, we will continue from this point. That's all for today, my hearers.